Hey, what's up? This is Just Plain Nonsense.
I am Michael.
And I'm Rob. All right, so we are back for part two of this this creepy podcast.
Yeah, we're bringing back our guest again, Clark, a.k.a. Creepy Kyle. And go ahead.
You wanted to do that just so you can have the sound effect, didn't you?
Yeah. Does that sound creepy?
A little bit.
Creepy.
Well, I wish... Kyle. I wish you could actually see Wardy's a lot creepier looking than creepier sounding.
That's very true.
Creepy.
Not quite.
Now he's just looking. Now he's just looking desperate. Mm-hmm. Now he just wants attention.
Well, then clearly I'm not good at being creepy sounding.
Well, I can tell by the size of your stomach, you're starving for attention.
Ba-dutch.
Yeah.
So he doesn't understand the rule about the puns, obviously.
Yeah, in the earlier episodes, I got in trouble a lot from using puns nonstop. He didn't think they were very punny. So he tried to put bring it to an end. But I'm glad to see we got another punner.
Right. Well, I'll keep it to a minimum.
I'm outnumbered today.
No, they can get pretty bad, but...
They get pun.
Well, I...
No!
The one that probably sticks out with me is when you have a good friend of yours and they call you out of desperation. When you have a friend of yours call you and he's got a flat tire, or when he just broke up with his girlfriend, or when, you know, he had a family member who died, or he lost his dog, you kind of can relate to the way they feel. When a friend of yours calls you and he tells you that he thinks that he's been possessed, or that he might have opened a door that he shouldn't have, when it comes to the paranormal world, you kind of look at it at a little bit different than when you've got a lost dog. And when I received in 2007, received a phone call at about 3 o'clock at night saying that you need to get over here, that I'm thinking about killing myself. You tend to take that very seriously. When I got there, he had told me that he was dabbling in something he did not know anything about. And this is another big warning. And the first thing I thought was Ouija board, because that's the most popular thing.
Right. That's the one that most people can.
Yes. That's one of those things that's very stylized in movies. I mean, you can go to Toys R Us and buy one in the board game aisle. You know, that's something that people, you could say Ouija board, even though they can't spell it.
I had one when I was younger, not an actual Ouija board, but it was a game that had a Ouija board in it. And right. I didn't understand what it was. And my dad, we got it as a gift. And my dad was like, get that out of my house right
exactly,
now.
Exactly.
I didn't understand why.
Well, it all comes from the fact that it's almost like a beacon, like right. A radio signal.
Right.
And you don't get to control whether whatever good comes through or whether it's bad. And you don't need the board, and you don't need the wooden slider or peg or whatever you want to call it. A lot of people make their own. If they're not cheap or poor, the fact that they don't feel that they should go out and buy one, they'll either print out a picture or they'll write it on a coffee table. And it's very popular to use a overturned glass. And normally this is something that they would do with several people. And I'm this is the first thing that came to mind, is that this dude's been messing with a Ouija board, because we've talked about it before.
Right.
I've tried to get him to go on paranormal adventures with us, to go on some type of... excursion where we went to maybe a lower end, you know, activity place, like maybe a woods, or believe it or not, even a cemetery that might not have a lot of stuff that really freak him out, because he's one of those people that would overreact about anything. So I'm thinking maybe this is less serious than what it really is. I could be no more further from the truth at that particular point. It was even after 7 years of doing research and being involved, it was even beyond my comprehension, because I had never heard of this method of communicating with the dead before, because there are more than one. There are many. And this is another one that is also quite popular, and it's called a psychomantium. He had watched a bargain basement thriller or B film, where a gentleman had used this to communicate with a dead loved one. And he had just had a recent breakup, and she had all the furniture. So he had a very skinny apartment, as we like to call it. And he had a room that I guess you could say was too big to be a closet, but too small to be a bedroom. And how this works is, is you get a chair and you put it in a preferably a small room like what he had, whether it be a den or a small bedroom, preferably something without a closet, something you can control the light. You would have to completely cover any window or not even think about turning the light on at this particular point and be able to at least stuff out any light coming in through the crack of the door. You're standing in this perfectly dark. Now you want to have control over some of the light and put the light behind you at an angle. And you can use one mirror, two mirrors, but mostly people use one. His was hanging on the wall. And mind you, before I even knew what I was even looking at, this was very disturbing to see this large comfy chair, which normally would be fun to sit in and play video games, sitting in a dark room with a couple of trash bags taped over a window and a old-fashioned mirror with a very ornate frame around it hanging from the wall at a 45-degree angle to the chair looked very discerning. And I said, "What are you doing?" And after he'd broke up with this girl, he had relayed to me that, no, man, it was mutual and this and that or another. Well, he took it a little bit harder than normal. She had the good job. She was supporting him. She had all the furniture, all the friends. And he was at a very low point in his life. So he would go into this room for hours at a time and sit and stare into this mirror. Now, please keep in mind, this mirror is at an angle. And sometimes people would use two mirrors, both of them at an angle, reflecting inwards towards each other at an angle, at a 45-degree angle. And he would sit there and for a while and not say anything. He had saw this and did some research, mild research, as I like to say, which means he hits about two websites and he's gained all the information that he needs. He's now borderline expert on
that's
the matter.
That's how most people do a lot of their research.
Exactly. Google told me the first three websites are what I need to know, so that's what I need to know. And I told him, I said, did any of these websites tell you to be extremely careful with this? And he was like, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, I didn't believe in it until it started happening. And he had accepted a spirit into his life, a spirit that filled the void of the girlfriend.
Ah,
exactly. He was looking for a companion, though not to be sexually, but he was looking for a companion that was slash girlfriend slash best friend to fill the void.
Right.
And this spirit had taken form as to filling that void. So not to say that the spirit that he conjured was already this way. It's just the spirit had entered into his life and had become the thing he needed.
Okay.
Exactly the right round peg to fit in the round hole that he needed. And everything that we learn in research doing that anytime a spirit does that, it's doing it for a reason to benefit itself. Well, if this guy likes tall blondes, then I'm going to tell him I'm a tall blonde. You know? And it automatically he told the spirit exactly who he was looking for and exactly what he wanted. So if it's an evil spirit, and I want to get into this guy or I want to mess this guy's life up, of course I'm going to tell him what he wants to hear.
Right.
If it's a legit spirit, it's like, well, you know, I'm kind of a 43-year-old balding guy and, you know, I'm kind of lonely too, but I like to bowl on weekends. So they're going to be a little bit more, but that's not what he's looking for.
Right.
Yeah, they're past manipulation 101.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're on the 102.
Yeah.
So first question I asked him was, you know, Dan, how long has this been going on? He says about 6 months. And he says, this has been going on 6 months. You know what I like to do in my spare time, and you've just now brought this up to me? Well, he was ashamed. Thus, he should be.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is weird. Oh, hey, dude, I just thought I'd let you know that I was talking to this mirror the other day. No, it just isn't something that comes up in discussion. Yeah. But it had gotten out of hand to the point to where he was now looking forward to it every day. That it was starting to define him. It was starting to rule him. That it had become a very strong addiction. And that he needed it in his life. And if he didn't have it, then he was thinking about death himself.
You know, yeah, if this was on that show, My Strange Addiction, this would be like the episode.
this would be
the grand finale.
This season finale, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, loneliness is a very, very powerful.
Exactly.
I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but it's very powerful, and it can cause you to do some very drastic,
right,
extreme things.
Well, he wasn't the greatest looking guy. He wasn't in the best of shape. Didn't have money. Didn't have a very had a part time job, but he had left. He had lost this great thing in his life because of himself, and this was the filling the void part. And I said, okay, first of all, we leave the house. We leave the apartment. That's the first thing we do. He says, well, I've got to close the door. Now, I don't know if you've seen any videos where people who are OCD about how many times they have to turn the doorknob or how many times they have to wash their hands, things like that.
I saw a TV show that had a character in there like that, and it was different than I thought it was, because, you know, everybody says, right, they have OCD. They're like, oh, I have OCD. I like this thing to be straight. That's not OCD. I saw a portrayal of it, and it was a comedy, but it was a dramedy, actually. And they showed the character with OCD, and it was Scrubs.
Well,
but the character with the OCD was something I'd never seen before. So
it's, if you see somebody with it in real life, you're like, come on, we got to go. How many times do you have to close that door before we leave? Well, he basically had to close the door, and then before he closed it, he had to close it real slowly, and he whispered into the room. And he says, she likes it when I let her know where I'm going and when I'm coming home. And I said, oh, it's a she. He says, well, yeah. You know, I'm like, well, I'm not going to think you're gay just because you're talking to a male spirit. I'm just saying, that did it tell you specifically that it is a she? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, we'll talk about the rest of this when we get into a safe zone. So he had to do that. And then what he did was, is he ran his finger down the crack of the door, because it was a double door. It was a double door room. And
did this thing create his OCD?
He already was maybe a little, it's always easy to create more when you already have the beginnings.
Right.
And he was probably a little bit. Never owned anything other than a white car.
Huh.
You know, mother died at a very early age, and but not so early that he didn't remember her. And there was probably some of the beginnings of OCD in his family, especially with his dad. He always was a germaphobe, which is another telltale sign. Not everybody, but for people that I've met. And he just did some weird things that I've never seen him or anybody else do. Like they were, like there was somebody in the other room, and he was trying to placate to them and let them know, or like almost like he had a dog locked up in a kennel and say, okay, honey, you know, you got to kennel up now. You know, I'll be back in a little bit, you know, just chill out for a little bit. I'll be home soon. It was almost like he was treating it like that. Like it would be lonely with him not there. So we left, and the minute we left, his demeanor completely changed. And we find this in possession all the time. They're one way inside. Then the minute you grab them and pull them through the threshold of the door onto the front porch of whatever place you're at, all of a sudden they're like, man, what happened to me? This is the way he was. He went from baggy eyed, sad, you know, looking like a basset hound that just got whipped, to basically like, wow, it's just a big relief, just a little weight off my shoulders. I mean, he looked much, much better. And we got in the car, and I just drove, and he fell asleep.
Huh.
It was so demanding of him. It had taken over so much that it had taken over part of his sleep. So we went back to my apartment, and I told my roommate what he was going through. And my roommate is real big into video and real big into doing stuff like that. And he's like, should we film it? And I'm like, I don't know, with his permission. He didn't want to. He didn't want to have it filmed. But we did a session where we interviewed him and asked him we asked him all the right questions, and he broke down. He completely broke down. Yes, I did it. This is what I did. I did it because I was lonely, and this is what the spirit is doing for me. And basically, it was like a friend/girlfriend. It was like a girl that lived in the apartment with you that you were attracted to, but she wouldn't sleep with you. She was just a really good friend that's a female. You see what I mean? Yeah. And it gave him that connection, that self-worth. It woke him. He said it woke him up for work. It would wake him up. He wouldn't even have to set his alarm. He would just wake up.
He could feel
the depression on his bed when she would sit at the edge of his bed, and he could feel the bed go down.
How does that not creep you out enough to just stop right there?
Because I wanted all of it.
No, not him.
Oh, him? Because it was a comfortable feeling.
If something were to sit next to me right now,
yeah,
I'd be like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm moving.
So you're not rock bottom.
Well, see.
Right, I guess that's true.
See, for him, what it was it didn't do that right off the bat. It did what slowly we call the stair step.
I gotcha.
And I said, has this thing done anything, like moved any objects or anything? I mean, because I know depressing a bed would be considered moving an object, but he says, yeah, my keys go missing. I turn around, boom, they're on the coffee table. Oh. Or boom, they're hanging up, and they're normally not there. I know for a fact that I'll go and put them on top of the microwave, and sometimes when I use the microwave and I'll put stuff on top of the microwave, I'll drop my keys back behind the microwave because that's one of the first places I look. Things like that, little idiosyncrasies that he knows about himself, and then he'd be like, man, what did I do with my keys? Boom, there they are, right there on the end of the counter. And he's like, I know I didn't put him there. And he's always says, thank you, and this and that. That's how it started. It started with the pleasantries. It started with the...
Ooh, so this evolves.
That's how most dates start, too.
Exactly.
Most relationships.
With the pleasantries.
Oh, I'm so sweet.
It's nice to meet you.
Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And it escalated into much more. And to where that it wanted more from him. And this where we get into this the type of energy that people produce. And when they go in and they're possessed, or when they go in and they have an event, they feel drained. They feel physically drained.
Right.
They might have only woke up 3 hours ago, and they might have had a big, nice meal, and I'm feeling pretty good. And all of a sudden they're just like, man, I feel like I hit the wall. I mean, that's the way he was.
Right.
And he was at the point where his boss was telling him that, dude, you look like crap. Are you sleeping? And this guy only works 3 days a week.
So he's almost like Edward Norton in Fight Club.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just getting more and more terrible every day.
Exactly. And it had become a problem. And he said at first it was nice.
So it was kindly breaking him down, you know, kind of convincing him to submit himself and break himself down and make himself more weak and more vulnerable.
Exactly. I'm gonna open up myself, because if she's nice enough to show me where my keys are, and if she's nice enough to make sure I don't sleep through my alarm, and if she's nice enough to do this, that, or another, then what else could she do if I give her a little bit more?
It's like the government.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, that was for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it's like the government.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's how it all starts. You
give them a little bit of trust.
You give them the honey before you give them the vinegar. And it eventually got to the point to where I said, well, what was the turning point? What was the defining factor? And he said, I'd met a girl, and I needed her help with one of our classes. And because he was a one semester behind, because I went in the summer and he didn't that particular year. And he had met a girl that was going to help him with a particular assignment. And for the life of him, every time he would program her number into his phone, he'd plug his phone in the next day and it would be erased.
Hmm.
Ooh, this thing's seen something coming that was going to pull him from it.
Competition.
It's jealous.
Competition.
I don't know if it's really, I don't think it's jealousy. I think based off of what I'm learning, it's this thing wants to get power over his friend so he can do its deed. And it can't, if human interaction pulls it back into reality and pulls it into, hey, snaps him, check this out. What are you doing? You know,
yeah, could be. So what he did was, he created a fake profile on his phone, thinking maybe the phone was maybe full of data. Maybe it's full of phone numbers, thinking maybe he tried to program one. And so he programmed another one and put Richard on it. Phone number stayed just fine. He created another one, any man's name. He created one for, you know, Stacy or Rebecca, and it would be deleted the next morning.
Huh. Okay.
So it knew that having a friend is one thing, but having a girl that could possibly come over and stay there and, I guess, take away time from it, I guess it thought maybe in my mind it seemed like
moving on the territory.
Moving in on territory.
Distract him back into civilization.
Exactly. Because I said, now, Dan, we're going to have to go back to this apartment, and we're going to have some type of disconnect, and you might even have to break your lease, and you might have to visit what I like to call a spiritual guardian, which would be someone who could perform a ritualistic cleansing on you to get this to go away. Oh, this might be something that you're going to carry with you for the rest of your life. You've dealt so deep into it. I don't know if I can get enough people up here and get to somebody who can help you right away, but we can do this in steps. And he says, lately it's been putting the guilt on me. I'm hearing voices. It's telling me if we want to be together, then, you know, he quit drugs years and years ago, back even before I met him. But it was telling him to start doing drugs again.
See, there's another sign right there. It's
exactly
not something wanting his attention because it loves it. It's actually something evil trying to
exactly, but
control him more and more.
Yeah, it's trying to make him dependent on all the different things. And when you're on drugs, you're inhibited, so you make different decisions, like decisions differently than you would if you were sober.
Right. And I told him, I said this. I said, I understand that you were sad. I understand that you were in a bad spot, but you were meddling in things that ought not to be meddled in. And it really got to that point where it was telling him that, you know, death isn't as bad as you think it is. And when he heard that, I'm like, wait a minute, you were like hearing full body voices. And he's like, yes. I was like, do they sound feminine? He says, they sound feminine, but they sound distant. It's not like it's coming up and whispering in my ear. It's like almost like if your wife was in the other room and you were downstairs and she was yelling to you and they were speaking clearly, but it's coming from a great distance.
Creepy factor just went up right there.
Your hair standing on end now.
Yeah. And I said, does she have an accent? And he said, yes. She has an accent. As far as I can tell, it's English. Or, as he liked to call, British. And I was like, okay.
What's the queen?
Yeah. I was like, can you tell just by the tone of her voice if she's older? And he goes, no, she's probably younger. But that's what I told her I liked. And I said, wait a minute. How did this all come about? He goes, the way I read it was I had to, it was basically like a telephone call to the spirit world directory.
Right.
I went in this room, I set up the mirror, I sat in the chair. This is the type of girl I'm looking for. And
so it's like a dating video.
Exactly. That's way he described what he was looking for. And there was none of this. Well, I'm Roger and I'm probably not what you're looking for, but maybe you'll pick me. No, it was like literally, oh, hi, I'm. You know,
so it's like Tinder for the spiritual world.
Exactly.
And he found a spirit that swiped right.
Yeah. Basically, you know, it was like he was going through the ghost Ledex and this is the one that he picked. But right. The thing I told him, he would get very, he would itch himself and he would run his fingers through his hair and he'd change the subject when I would ask him what her name was.
So you think it told him not to tell anybody?
Yes.
Or did he not even know?
I think it told him not to tell. I think it told him that if you tell anybody my name, that I won't talk to you anymore, or I'll leave you or punish you in some way. And I said, has she done anything to harm you? And yet again, we have the breaking of the eye contact, the scratching of the arm.
See,
looking throughout the room, I said, she has, hasn't you? Hasn't she hurt you? She has. And he said, yeah, but it was an accident. And I said, well, in most abuse cases, yeah, it is an accident when it starts out, isn't it? And he says, I know what you're thinking. I was taking a shower and I was talking to her and she was in the other room. It at least seemed like she was in the other room. And I was getting out of the bathtub because you got the bathtub shower, cheap apartment. And he said, he says, you'll never guess who I saw the other day. And all of a sudden he had three marks on his left arm and he felt the pain and the burning. She knew who I was going to say my ex-girlfriend.
Before you said it. Now, is that because that can raise your question? Is it because it's so infinitely intelligent because it's been around so long that it could just read human interaction? Or could it read his mind?
Or was it there before him and her broke up and was waiting for that connections to bring it into his existence?
If it could read his mind, then it would have known about all the female phone numbers that were put in there. The male phone numbers that were the diversion to test.
Because maybe he linked up to it, like we said before, it meant to, you know, because you have to welcome these kind of things, right? So it's not like, so once he got so deep into it, this thing was fusing with him, possibly.
Exactly.
Maybe, melding with it. And
exactly. And this whole time my roommate's going, dude, we got to get somebody else in here. This is not something.
This is beyond us.
This is pro status.
Yeah. We can't do this. So I called a teacher of mine that did this on the side, and she said, I'll get somebody to contact you, you know, tomorrow. And I went back to his place and grabbed his stuff. We went straight in. He said nothing, grabbed a duffel bag, and he came and crashed at our place. But I will tell you that it was almost like watching a smoker smoke their last cigarette before they were quitting. When he walked in, he looked at the room. First thing he did when he walked in, went and gathered his stuff. And every time he walked past that room, he looked. He didn't stop what he was doing, but he was looking. He was waiting to see if something was going to happen.
Oh.
I know it. I could tell. It's almost like you're watching a baseball game right before they throw the pitch. Is it going to be a home run or a strike? Oh, it's a
strike. I'm surprised that he was so open to all the suggestions that you made.
I think it was the fact that it finally had started talking to him about death. I think he's not the type of person that would ever even contemplate suicide.
Okay.
And I think that scared him. I think he got to the point to where he thought, at least this is what he was kind of alluding to later when he got what I like to call clean. You know, he was alluding at the fact that he isn't the type of person that would commit suicide, but this thing would eventually break him down to the point that was a possibility.
Now, in your experience, in your 16 years or so of investigation and research and such, would you say that entity was demon, shadow person, or what do you think that being was? Or is it still unknown?
Or was it just a crazy ex-girlfriend?
Well, whatever it was, I do not believe it was an attractive British woman.
Right, yeah.
or at one time. I believe it was, this is what the guy's looking for. I'm going to give it to him. And then I'm going to get what I want out of him. And maybe I can get a feed off of his energy and get what I need. And if he dies, you know, I can feed off that too. It does start to follow Shadow Person, though he never, not one time, admitted to ever seeing any type of shadow or it manifesting itself in physical form or anything like that.
And because to me, in my mind, I'm leaning more towards a demon.
Well, definitely. It could have been. But with him, it was, you know, I liked her so much, I didn't need to see the physical form. It was almost like you loved that girl so much, you didn't care if you slept with her or not. You just enjoyed being around her. He didn't care about the physical appearance. So I'm sure maybe if he might have cared a little bit more, maybe it would have tried to show him. But he came and stayed with us for a little bit, and I got him in contact with somebody, and they did. They burned the incense around him and went to a clean place and cleaned him out real good, you know, and did their whole chant and everything. You know, that's another one of those things where I'm on the fence about as well. But if anything, it was a placebo effect. And it was like seeing a whole different person when he came back. And he was like, remember he'd had virtually nothing in the apartment. He's like, I'm just going to go to the leasing office. I'm going to go ahead and just cancel my lease, pay whatever it is I got to pay. And I'm out. I'm not even going to go back up there. And I said, good for you. I said, are you ever going to do this crap again? He said, hell no. He said, I'm going to stick to the living. I said, well, we don't know if whatever it was ever alive to begin with, at least alive as we know it. But I never went to that apartment. He never went to that apartment. I'm sure they re-rented it. I'm sure the service guy, the maintenance guys went in there and saw what little was left in there and they moved it out. There's no doubt in my mind they went in there.
Follow-up. look up that apartment and see anything strange.
Oh, that's one of those things where, here again, it's back into the, I didn't experience anything, so I don't know.
Right.
You know what this kind of reminded me of a little bit? I mean, it's way different, but another story you told me a while back about, I can't remember if it was something you've seen on a movie or something you were actually experienced, like, because, you know, I've talked to you quite a bit over the last few years, but the one where he wanted you to say the demon's name, or you're not supposed to say the demon's name because it's
Well, what they do in the demonologist when they confront one, when they get the demon to call out their name, to tell you what their name is.
I mean, that's what, because you're talking about one experience where there was a mirror, once again, another mirror, and this family in a house, and they actually saw a physical form.
Yes.
And that, then you told me its name, and then, and like, it was supposed to be like,
right,
when the demonologist got a hold of it, it was like, maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
Right.
They're like, dude, that is not one you want to mess with.
Exactly. It's like there's lots of ghost shows that I like to watch that are the versions of recreating what actually happened. And in that particular instance, a lot of people just move. When they get to that point, they don't know what they're dealing with. They just leave.
Well, it's fight or flight. You can't fight this thing, so I'm flying.
Exactly.
That's very true.
Exactly. And it was one of those aha moments where you're watching like a documentary, or you're watching something about a plane crash, or you're watching something about September 11th, and you go, well, I remember what I was doing at that point. Well, I was watching a particular show, and it was telling about a particular event that happened at a house. And then they said the demonologist's name. And I was like, I know that guy. I talked to that guy. I remember him telling me about this one. And in that particular instance, I remember him saying that the minute he found out what that demon was that was in that upstairs bedroom, he told the people right away, you're out of here right now. He's like, this is something that is going to take a long time to battle out, get the children out, get yourself out, get the family out. And I just thought it was crazy because I see all these shows, and then finally to run into somebody you've actually seen before, it threw me for a loop. But I thought it was weird because after Dan got out of that apartment, it was like he turned his entire life around. He got that $50,000 a year job less than a year later, patched things up with a lot of the family that he'd been away with, ended up getting married, has a couple of kids, and his life is just going down the right path. And I would never, even to this day, bring it up. I mean, it'd be one thing if, you know, we were doing something crazy and got kicked out of a bar, I'd be like, oh, hey, Ward, remember that one time? But I would never bring this up in front of him or his children or his wife ever, because it was that affecting on his life. But that's an actual technique to communicate with the dead that I had learned through the hard way, because as soon as he got clean and got out of there, I started doing research on it, and it dates way back.
Yeah, it's creepy because it's like, you know, you think you're seducing this spirit to be your friend because you're curious, and the whole time it's waiting for someone to do this, so it seduces you, and then it just totally breaks you down, and you can't turn away because you think it's doing this kind gesture, and it's all part of a master plan. And think, you've been on this planet for, you know, 30 something years. I've been on this planet 29 years. You know, think of something that's been, think of the wisdom and knowledge you've accrued just in that period of time is nothing compared to a being that's been around for just eons of time. I mean, how do you battle this thing?
Like,
this thing's came through Creepy Kyle's or Clark, whatever the listener to know you as. They've experienced people like you for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, they know what you're going to do before you're going to do it. You're at least your first 10 moves at least.
Right.
You know,
it's been there. It's done that.
Yeah. And that's why the name of that particular demon with that demonologist, you know, that's why he knew with that one. He's like, oh, this one's been around. This one's experienced a lot of attacks. This is get out now. We're not going to.
Yeah. This
isn't going to be a trip to the dollar store.
This is Moses time.
Yeah.
See, my brain takes me to a completely different perspective. Cause you're like, this thing's been around forever. It's got all these, it's experienced all this stuff. My mind is like, so what's it been doing this whole time? Like, what does it do to pass the time? Is it bored? Like, does it have
It's an order of chaos.
Does it have a Nintendo Switch sitting around that it just plays?
It's called human beings.
Okay.
You know, it's that's
so where, it plays the literal game of life.
Yeah, it literally, it's like, you know, how many people can I screw over today?
7.3 billion of us right now. Like, You could find one here and there. Keep
right. Right. Time. But with me, it was, you know, there's many, many ways to that people use to contact the dead. And I had never heard of this one and this one. And for a good friend of mine to come out of nowhere and be like, hey, I've been doing this psychomantium. I was like, wait a minute. I've been doing this for years. I should know about this. And
so at that point, you hadn't heard of that term.
Oh, I had not.
He's like, this is like some kind of pharmaceutical drug.
Yeah.
Sounds like a type of metal
or a late 70s, like really bad B film, you know, you know, where they're moving their lips, but the words don't match up because you realize they filmed it in Italy
and you had to translate
They dubbed it in English. Yeah. But that was one particular thing. And then soon later, my roommate was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Cause he always wanted to be a cameraman, do stuff like that and work with video. And he's like, he had been with us on a couple of things and cause he was really good at being a cameraman, but he's like, I'm out. And to this day, he hasn't done anything, won't do anything like that because he saw the way our friend acted and the way it completely consumed his life. I mean, it from the little things that he did have in that apartment, they were put exactly where this thing told him to put them, where to put your ashtray, you know, make sure you keep the sink clean and stuff like that. Little things that he'd normally, I mean, he was a confirmed bachelor, you know, there was always dishes in the sink and he thought that this was a good thing, that right. It was helping him. Well, of course, that's the way it's going to seem at first.
Human beings can get used to literally anything.
Right.
Yeah. We adapt pretty well to things.
So right. To him, it was like, oh yeah. Okay. Hey demon, can you throw this out when you leave?
Yeah, can you? My back is killing me. Just a little lower, and
how does that feel, baby?
Yeah, yeah. And I told him, I said, none of this is normal. You know that, right? And he's like, well, I know it's not normal, but I needed it, and it complied. It reciprocated my need. I said, but the only thing is it's symbiosis in nature. It's getting something from you. And you're getting something from it to an extent, but then there's that switch where now it's like, all right, I'm done doing the good things for you. Now you're going to start doing things for me. And I said, I'm surprised it didn't try to tell you to kill somebody else. And he's like, oh, no. It always tried to get me to, it started slowly starting to get me to do bad things. Like it took me 3 weeks to call you.
Oh, wow.
Because every time I got the idea to call you and I would scroll through and I would think about it, think I'll call you and I'll do this. For some reason, I couldn't do it.
It'd distract him.
It would distract him or it would placate. I mean, it wasn't always bad. And when it did start to get worse, every once in a while, when he would start to self-doubt, then it would do something nice. And I said, this is a very intelligent, manipulative, whatever it is.
Yeah, that sounds like a typical abusive, manipulative relationship.
I love
just
you.
Just like between two people.
I love you, but I hate you. I'm going to treat you like crap. But then I'm going to say, I'm sorry. And everything's going to be okay. You know, I'm like this.
And they break you down so that you feel like you're worthless. So you can't really go anywhere else.
Exactly.
So that was, he felt worthless before he, you know,
right. Well, he was the perfect catalyst. If I was a spirit and I was going to do that to somebody, that's a number one person I'm going to go after. And that right there. I mean, if the police would have called me and said, hey, do you know anything about, you know, a friend of yours that, you know, that killed himself, and I'd have been like, what are you talking about? You know? And if I'd have went to the apartment, seen it set up, I wouldn't know what I was looking at.
Right.
I would have had no idea. I mean, it was day and night. I mean, there towards the end, I started to see him less and less, but I just, you don't figure he just got a new game or maybe he's picked up with a new crowd or, you know, maybe he's just sulking or something.
He just shacked up with a demon and now he's just chilling.
Yeah. You don't ever think of that. I mean, it's not the first thing that comes to mind, but I do know that when you're dealing with a Ouija board, you do follow the rules. And one of the things you're supposed to do is when you say hello and you ask your questions, you're always supposed to say goodbye. So that's supposed to be the disconnect, the hanging up of the phone.
So if you don't say goodbye, you never hung up the phone.
Exactly. And then
also if you never, isn't it true if you like, you let it come off the board, that's a bad thing too.
Well, I've heard that, but really to tell you the truth, everybody I've heard that's had experiences with it in a bad way, they end up just like running out of the room with it still on. And I'm like, that's never a good sign. I mean, anytime I've ever read any cases or done any research on cases, they always go bad because they never follow all of the rules. Never do it by yourself. Never sit there on the Ouija board by yourself alone. It's just
or cheap. Just never do it.
Yeah. Or just never do never it. Never.
Now, while I got you here, this would be the best time to ask you some stuff like this. Do you have any stories of any type of like creatures or beings or entities or just stories in general that have happened, like cases that are actual real reports that the listeners probably never heard of? Or
well, there's always those ones where you hear the same ones over and over that everybody's got the one. And one of the more popular ones is going to conventions. And I ran into a gentleman whose sole purpose in life, because he experienced it, was to research every lonely road girl he could find.
Lonely road.
Okay. Lonely, like I'm driving on a road in the middle of the night and I come up on this girl and she wants me to take her home and she gets in the car and she's cold and distant and I take her to her house and I turn around and she's gone. That
I would lose my mind.
That is one of the largest and biggest probably legends out there, that every small town or every little rural nook and cranny has got their version of the story. And he had told me that he had documented well over 200 cases of basically the same story, where it's 90% of the time, if not more, it's a guy. And it's always a girl who's at least moderately attractive, or at least attractive to whoever the driver is. Right. And they all follow the same path. Now, I'm not to butcher the story and to say that, oh, a girl can't die in the same way all across this country. No, people die the same way all the time.
Right.
Fall out a window, you fall out a window. But he did come across one particular case that he thought was rather bizarre, where the police would just try to, explain this away. And I don't have any of the real locations on them, because he's like, they're everywhere. They're literally, it's like the story gets passed down and accelerated and spent so much that everybody knows where they're at. And they're just, everybody's got the same story. He said that she said, but this one was very interesting because a lot of them are being told from like the 60s and 70s. Of course, we regurgitate the same story to make it in our time.
Right.
And this one was at the beginning of the analog phone time, when phones were in their infancy, but not so much that they were giant field radios against your head.
Right. So they just like the radial or the dial.
Yeah.
The rotary dial.
Well, it was analog, but you could carry it with you wherever you went. You. Probably late 90s, early 2000s. And the guy basically was on his way to a Halloween party. And this small town basically had another even smaller town that was just beside it. And he was going to that party at the smaller town. But they had a strip mine that separated the two towns. And I've looked it up and tried to find it. And I found several locations that match up with this, that it could be. Of course, there's lots of these stories. So what they did was they closed this road that separated these two towns, because it was such a high traffic road and it was so dangerous on this road that at night sometimes people would have accidents, because it goes straight turn.
Yeah, it just comes out of nowhere.
It comes out of nowhere. And I've been on lots of roads like that. They're scary. So what they did was they built a bigger road that goes around the strip mine, so that way they can get from the small town to the smaller town.
Okay.
Well, he had called his friends on his new analog phone. And he said, well, you know, guys, when I get out to that area, you know, when I get out there, you know, my phone's not going to work. You know, this is you get up on a highway and drive so far away from a tower, it ain't going to work anymore.
Right.
Before 4G, before 3G and any of that stuff. So his friends are at the party and they're on a regular phone and they're like, well, all right, well, just let us know when you get here. Remember, don't take such and such road because it's dangerous at night. He says, nah, man, I'm good. I got to get to that party. So he goes down the road he's not supposed to go down. And he calls a buddy of his at the party, and his buddy answers, and he says, "Hey, where you at, man? You know," he says, "you said you were going to take that road towards a shortcut. I mean, there's an hour-long car ride all the way around." He says, "There's a girl out here, and I'm gonna pick her up and take her to the party. She's kind of cute." Now here's
that sounds
the part,
like a good reason to pick her up and take her to a party.
Here's the part that stands out the most to me, because every time I read one of these urban legends that seems to follow from the East Coast to the West Coast, they're always about the 1950s and 60s where there's a lack of communication on the move.
Gotcha.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no, "Hey, I'm leaving my house now. The next time you hear from me, I will be at the party."
Right.
So his friends were like, "Okay, all right, you know, bring her on, you know, the more the merrier. You got juveniles that are underage drinking, you know," right, "they're having a good time, the more the merrier." Well, they notice some time goes by and he doesn't show up, and they're thinking, well, this, maybe he pulled off somewhere, you know, and he's enjoying himself. Well, the next morning, the police are looking for him because his family is fairly influential. And here again, it didn't help narrow down where this happened, because
he was mobile.
Yeah, he was mobile. So what they did was, this was before they could really ping cell phones and find out where they were at. So they basically just went down there after they asked everybody at the party, you know, "You're not in trouble. We know you guys are out here doing stuff. We got a kid that's missing. His family's well to do. Everybody's concerned about him. He took this road, never showed up at the party." So they go looking and they find this car down in the gully. He's got this sports car, you know, he's the high school quarterback, right. You know, everybody loves him, treats everybody great, but now he's dead. And the part that really stands out before any of the other stories is everybody has a full conclusion of the story, because all of their stories are the guy picks the girl up, takes her to her house where she used to live, and then she just disappears. And then the guy goes up and knocks on the door and says, "Hey, I just dropped a girl off and she just disappeared." "Well, that was my daughter who died 10 years ago." Mm-hmm. This one, the kid actually died in a car wreck. Now, you try to being a researcher and going online and pulling hours upon hours upon hours, you know how many car wrecks you're looking at from that time period, because you're trying to narrow it down. It's very difficult. And this guy had basically said that the reason why this one sticks out more than anything else is because we have a casualty. Now, he had a casualty at a spot in the road that people normally have accidents on. And yes, there were some fatalities. And after this, they end up closing the road and redoing it because it's a service road for the strip mine. But the part that really set out only came out years after, when they had all the police photos, because a death is a death. They take pictures of the crime scene. Right. If it's a crime, then they deem it an accident. They still take photos. And the part that stood out for this researcher that still haunts him to this day is the fact that him and another guy were doing, the reason why he's obsessed with it, were doing all the information they can, because when you get into a car, what does the normal person do before they turn the car on, or at least right after they turn the car on?
Put their seatbelt on.
Exactly. Now, how many people do you know get into a car and attach the passenger side seatbelt?
Dude, I seriously just got the chills.
Now, I've been a single person in an automobile many, many times. I never reach over and click the seatbelt beside me.
I can't even see him. I do that off of habit. It's just not, even if somebody rides with you every day to work, you still don't click.
And it wasn't like an old 80s car that has the automatic sliding ones, because even if they did, you still have to slide across the lap.
Right.
And he said when he saw that, it was that aha moment that he was looking for, that these events actually, that there's some base in reality that this actually did happen. But he does not. I said, first thing I said, "Do you believe that she killed him?" And he says, "No, I believe that this kid was kind of into the ghost girl and wasn't paying attention to the road." and ended up driving off himself.
What if, just a idea here.
I'm here we go.
All right.
Here we go.
What's the conspiracy, Ward?
What if she... Always a conspiracy joke with me. All right. What if the ghost tries to see if somebody will seduce her? And if they do, they die. But since the guys that make it to her house, they can do the knock, they made it.
That's a very good point.
It could be. It could very well be. He could have probably tried to touch her physically.
Yeah.
Because...
Drunk high school kid.
I mean, you know? Literally, you could go online and see literally hundreds of stories of this same thing going on in every state,
right.
Literally.
Because you'll see people that live and people that die, right?
Well, yeah, but the people that live, it all follows the same story. Oh, it was my brother-in-law, it was my cousin. Well, they all still kind of follow the same story, even when they hear it from word of mouth versus reading the text.
Right.
And when he saw the police photos and saw that the windshield was spidered out, but still intact, and saw that the car was still locked from the inside, and that they didn't even wait for the parents to bring the other set of keys. They cut him out and broke the windows. And the fact that all the windows were still intact, and the fact they cut him out of there, leaded him to believe, as well as me after seeing the pictures, that true to life, somebody else got in that car, put the seatbelt on, and when the car overturned, they had to have gotten out of the car somehow. But if you go to get out of a car after a car accident, don't you take the seatbelt off first?
I mean, unless you can't take it off, but I mean.
But then if you got out, you cut it off, or else you're still in the seat.
Or else you're still in the seat.
Well, I mean, if you're super, super small, you can wiggle your way out. But like you said, the door was locked. The doors were locked.
It was like a two-door sports car, but all the windows were still basically intact. I mean, he broke his neck and died. Now, maybe it could be something like that. I mean,
unless some girl ran to the hospital, the police, or anything. You know,
yeah, weren't any like reports or anything, were there?
The only copy of the police report that he had basically said that he was careless driving.
No, I mean, like, were there any reports of a girl?
Oh, no, no.
Going to a hospital around there anywhere?
Absolutely not. He said he couldn't find anything. He said at this particular time, he'd figured that this place already had stories about a girl wandering on a road at night. But he says at this location where he was at, there wasn't one.
Hmm.
I mean, everybody's got their own little urban legends in their little pockets across the country and even the world. But he's like, I didn't go into this already assuming that there was already a story here already. He's like, it just so happened that this is where it was. And other people he would meet and they would say, hey, this is the place you need to go. But I mean, there's hundreds of these across the country. To name one specifically, I mean, California's probably got a couple thousand.
Oh yeah,
the long windy roads out in the valleys. Oh yeah, there's a ghost girl walking out there.
I lived in California for better part of a decade. I've seen those crazy roads.
Man, this kind of story is the one that like these are the ones that get me, because like when you talk about like somebody talk to a spirit or may have like seen something here and there, like that is like, I'm like, okay, it's a possibility. But this, the ones like this, where there's actual, like something physical actually did happen and it's completely unexplainable like that. Like if you were trying to stage this, like who would think to like fasten the passenger seatbelt?
Right. I mean,
get people to think like, oh, there was somebody else in the car.
Well, I got to get out of this vehicle safely without leaving any DNA behind, without leaving any of my clothes or shoes or anything behind. I have to close the door, lock it, and make sure I close the seatbelt, and I have to leave no trace whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, who would even think about that? Why would you even try? What would be the purpose? To try to kill somebody? The guy said on the phone, I'm letting you go. You're starting to cut out. You know, I don't know who she is, but she's kind of cute. I'm bringing her to the... So obviously it's somebody that he doesn't know.
Right.
It's obvious. I mean, you're talking about a small town of 2,500 people and you're going to a town that has 900. Everybody knows everybody. Ain't no Halloween makeup going to hide
everybody
anybody.
Everybody calls you friend. I'm going to cut that out. Yeah, man. These kind of stories are the ones that just get to me. Like these are the ones that like, I love to hear about. Cause it gets you thinking, cause it's something that's completely off, like out completely out there.
You just don't really know until you first experience it. And then when you first experience it, your first reaction is, well, I don't believe it.
Yeah. Obviously.
And then after you get past the, I don't believe it, you do one of two things. Either you run screaming out of the room or you want more information. And more information is really where you should be, but it's back into that fight or flight.
Yeah.
Like you were saying.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that run out of the room screaming.
Right.
And that's a perfectly normal reaction.
I wouldn't be able to tell you which one I would be.
it would depend on the event.
Right.
It would depend on the event.
I would try to out-creep the creepy thing that I'm experiencing.
When it comes to your pants off. Right. Just start talking about yourself. When it comes to the four pillars, everybody I've talked to says that ghosts really aren't the scariest.
Right.
The one that they're most afraid of. They would say that UFOs are actually pretty low on the totem pole too. Yeah. Secret societies, time warps, interdimensional travel is probably pretty cool to watch at distance, but you don't care.
Right.
The cryptids are the ones that scare people the most because they're the physical. They're the ones that can do the most harm.
Right. They're the ones that you're afraid of.
Exactly. I'm looking at a ghost and I don't know what I'm looking at. So I haven't run off in fear quite yet. Or I see a UFO in a distance and I'm like, oh, I'm trying to film it. That's pretty cool. There's something rustling in the bushes and I see three heads pop out.
I'm out.
Yeah. I'm going to pretty much jump through anything to get out of there. That's why I told my friends, I got no problem, you know, going out looking for ghosts because I might be able to jump through the ghost to get through the door, but not Bigfoot. I'm not going to go looking for that.
Right. All right, man. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. We want to thank you for coming and talking about all this creepy stuff. And now I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep. So we'll see how that goes.
That's just the edge.
All right. So make sure you guys check us out. I'll just play nonsense.ninja. Check us out on iTunes and Podbean. All right. And we'll see you later.
Out.